I love movies.
Here's the thing, Peter. Yeah. You're stepping over a line now. You're stepping over a line. You know you are.
I love watching them.
Why not let us
because it's so much fun, Chan. Get it?
Gosh, I love movies.
Okay, so I saw the trailer for Challengers, mm-hmm. and there's one scene, we might have talked about this already, there's one scene where Zendaya is playing tennis, and you see her ACL tear.
Mm-hmm.
I can't watch that movie because I've seen the trailer, and I didn't know that was coming, and it was the freakiest thing I've ever seen. I couldn't do it, man. I can't see that movie. I don't like knee stuff.
Oh. Oh. Is it because you had your own...
Yeah, I dislocated my knee, and that might have something to do with it.
Yeah.
Knee injuries are the worst.
I tore my ACL, and I'm fascinated by them because of it.
So you saw... have you seen the trailer?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the part where... did you hear?
Yeah.
And it didn't affect you?
I was, like, thinking about my own injury. I was like, did it happen like that?
Yeah. You said, that's cool.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Oh, man.
I wish I could go back in time and do, like, sports medicine. Because I think I'd really enjoy being, like, a trainer.
You know, there's still time.
Yeah. Hey.
I know you're married and established, but there's still time. Drew, you're going to have to bear with me today. The allergies are kicking in.
That's fine. They are the reason I'm wearing my glasses today is because the allergies have hit me hard.
You can't put it in context. They're too itchy.
Yeah.
Too disturbed your eyes are right now.
Yep.
Well, I can't hear out of my left ear.
Okay.
Actually, that's my right ear.
I've also lost all concept of direction.
Yeah, it's just been bad. I'm falling apart over here.
You look. Everyone's car is covered in pollen right now.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And if I just stop talking, uh-huh. I believe in you to take over and just ride us out for the rest of the time. So we're talking about two movies today. Before we get into the specifics of what those two movies are, it is Inherent Vice and The Big Lebowski. How would you describe these movies that we're going to talk about in one word?
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe these movies, Drew? You know what? You can use more than
psychedelic is probably a little, like, one step too far, but it's kind of on that track. In the notes you wrote, they're stoner comedies.
They are.
I think that's a good way to put it.
I would say meandering. You've got a guy mm-hmm. in both these movies who really are thrown into these conspiracies, and it just takes them to places that they weren't necessarily expecting. So these guys are meandering through this tale.
Right. Yeah,
and they're guys that can't use it as a verb, but I digress.
They don't really live their lives like on a straight line.
No,
so the movies aren't really on a straight line.
Just the way the plot takes them, but also they sort of do that to themselves through the use of, I would say, drugs.
Yeah, right.
I'm interested and I'm curious to see your thoughts on both these movies. Mm-hmm. So let's start with Inherent Vice, 2014. Paul Thomas Anderson,
mm-hmm.
if you're a faithful listener of the show, you will know that I am a huge Paul Thomas Anderson guy. He is my favorite director, and I think he is our greatest living director. And I know that's a big statement.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a big statement, but I connect more with his movies than I do anything else. And Drew, would you mind if I go a step further, actually?
Please.
I might even say that he is our greatest living artist.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. I am a huge Paul Thomas Anderson guy. Have been there since day one. Heartache, love it. Boogie Nights, love it. Magnolia, love it. I'm not going to say all the movies. The funny thing is, those are probably my three least favorite of his.
When was Boogie Nights?
Boogie Nights was 1997.
Okay. So he's been around since, what, early 90s?
Yeah, mid-90s, mm-hmm. pretty much. You can kind of think him and Tarantino sort of the same
kind of timeline.
Same timeline. So he had these three movies in the 90s, and then had Punch Drunk Love, There Will Be Blood, which is probably the best movie I've ever seen in my entire life. The Master, and then Inherent Vice, after that Phantom Thread and Licorice Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the guys had movies that range all along the spectrum, and me and our boy Tab, friend of the show, we're gonna deep dive into Paul Thomas Anderson. But for right now, let's talk about Inherent Vice. Not one of my favorites of his, but that being said, Drew, hear me out. Every Paul Thomas Anderson movie is better than probably 95% of any other movie I've ever seen in my entire life. I love this guy, love his movies, connect with his characters, and excited to hear what you think about Inherent Vice. What'd you think about it?
Heath, I am saddened and disappointed.
Oh, come on,
to
man.
Give you my review of this movie.
Come on, man.
Because I know it's going to break a little piece of you.
I saw your Letterboxd review. I'm just waiting.
I didn't like it.
Not only that, I saw that you gave it 1 star. So I went right. And I checked all of my other reviews.
Yep.
This is your lowest rated movie.
By like a star and a half.
By a star and a half. By far. You didn't like it at all?
No. I didn't like it at all, Heath.
Oh my gosh.
Which is weird. It's been a while since I watched a movie and was like, I don't know if I can pull something out of it that I liked.
You didn't even like laugh or anything like that?
Mm. Nope.
Oh my
I didn't.
Stars. Golly. You're killing me. You're killing me. But that's okay.
Listen.
What about it?
I think even you, who enjoys this movie, can yes. admit that it's not a conventional watch.
So you're looking at it from the perspective of Doc Sportello,
mm-hmm.
who's a private investigator, the main guy. He is always high.
Yeah.
And so you are seeing it through those lens. And so when you say unconventional, it's not even reliable. You don't even know what's real. I don't even know if any of the plot was actually real. It right. might have just been in his head while he was sitting on his couch.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It really depends on the viewer, right? Like, I think 100 people can watch it and feel 100 different ways about it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And I think if you go, I did a lot of, when I finished and I had my opinion of the movie, I wrote it down so I wasn't influenced by anything, right, and like put it in stone. And then I was like, I'm going to go check some reviews and see if I'm even, like, does everyone love this movie and I just missed it? And it's definitely, it gets very mixed reviews. Some people love this movie.
I think if you're a Paul Thomas Anderson fan,
mm-hmm.
you go to bat for him no matter what.
Right.
And this is in your wheelhouse. The funny thing is, though, as far as a PTA movie goes, this is the least PTA feeling, and it's the only movie he's done that is a straight adaptation from a book. So it's Thomas Pynchon's 2009 novel, Inherent Vice.
Yeah.
But anyway, keep going.
Is something that was interesting that I saw was that this one gets a higher critic score on Rotten Tomatoes than audience. You don't see that too often. I mean, a lot of times I see movies that critics aren't really on board with, but audiences really like it. But this one, it's flipped, where a lot of, it's something in the 70% on the critic score. And most critics are like, it's a good movie. And the audience is like 53%. It's like almost right down the middle, where it's like either people like it or they don't. That line is somewhere in between us.
Well, why do you think that is?
The narrative is not...
It's not necessarily artsy, but it's out there.
I don't think anyone who watches this movie is like, what a great plot. That thing was coherent from start to end.
You could argue that there's no plot.
But the people who enjoy it are able to look past that and say, well, I still like what the movie gave me from a visual standpoint and just kind of the feeling I got from being in that world. And others are like, there's no plot, and I didn't really care to be in this world, so it offered nothing.
Well, if you watch Paul Thomas Anderson movie, you can bet on a few things that it's going to look good.
Yep.
And there's going to be really good writing of characters. Mm-hmm. I think at the very least, you have those. So as little as I remember about the plot, like I watched this movie 3 times this week.
Okay.
And I still am not fully sure what the Golden Fang is. But there's memorable scenes that I think of Doc, the main character played by Joaquin Phoenix. I think of several lines that Josh Brolin's Bigfoot Bjornsson was able to say,
mm-hmm.
you know? At the very least, I think that this movie has roles and characters that you can remember, even if you didn't like them.
So when I ask you, why do you like Inherent Vice?
Okay.
Why? I need to hear that. I need it.
Well, first off, how you said, you know, 100 different people can watch this movie and get 100 different takes. We talked about this a little bit. This and The Big Lebowski, these are in my wheelhouse, man.
Yeah,
these are my kind of movies. Not necessarily stoner comedies, but I love a movie where a guy or a group of people are just hanging out, walking around, getting into shenanigans. And I think that describes both these movies pretty well. I think what I like the most about this movie in regards to Paul Thomas Anderson, I think this is his funniest movie.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And he's a pretty good comedic writer. Even in his more dramatic movies, there's still a lot of funny moments. But I think this is his straightest comedy. Not just in the writing from a dialogue standpoint, but there's a lot of visual gags, too. You know, I think of when Doc gets hit, when he goes into that massage parlor, and he gets hit in the back of the head, and then he gets knocked out, but he quickly turns around and tries to fight as he's falling down. Great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think just the little gags like that are funny. And so this is probably my sixth favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Mm-hmm. But I really like a lot about it. So let me say the synopsis of this story real quick, and then we'll get a little bit more into it.
This will be fun.
In a California beach community, private detective Larry Doc Sportello tends to work his cases through a smoky haze of marijuana. Now let's say that's a big emphasis in this movie.
Yeah.
One day Shasta, a former lover, arrives out of the blue to plead for Doc's help. It seems that Shasta's current beau, rich real estate tycoon Mickey Wolfman, has a wife who may be plotting to commit him to a mental hospital. When Mickey and Shasta both disappear, Doc navigates a psychedelic world of surfers, stoners, and cops to solve the case. If you read that and be like, hot dog, I'm in, you're going to like this movie. But if you're not about that, then that's fair.
Right.
That's fair. Listen, I do see, and I think it is fair, to criticize aspects of this movie. At the end, you're like, did any of that even matter?
Right, and that's probably not the point.
And it's kind of a hard movie to even talk about, because do you think it's even trying to say anything?
Well, yeah, you might be asking the wrong guy. I don't think so.
I think it's linked up to The Big Lebowski in several aspects. But I think one of them is, and we'll talk about what the dude represents specifically when we talk about The Big Lebowski, but these guys are anti-establishment, and they're going up against the establishment in both these movies. And so I think there's a little bit of that. But I don't know if there's necessarily a theme here. Mm-hmm. And I was hearing Paul Thomas Anderson talk about this movie. He goes, you know, I was just focused more on the characters themselves than I was like an overarching theme of the movie. Do you think that hinders the movie at all?
I was trying to figure out, why do I like Tenet and not this movie? Because they're both movies that I didn't understand really at all.
But
one movie I like and one movie I don't. And I liked the world of Tenet. And maybe...
You didn't like the stoner beach community LA?
I was like, I have no desire to hang out here. Which is weird, because another movie that we've done on this podcast that I enjoyed that had some similar feelings in that regard was The Nice Guys. 70s, it's not as much like a kind of a stoner and surfer.
It's more of
vibe,
an action comedy.
But it's still in that world, you know, where you're still in the 70s and things are kind of jivey, you know.
Far out, man.
Right, yeah. But for some reason it works for me in that one. But again, maybe I felt like some of the points that it hits along the way were more enjoyable to me than in this one.
This movie, I guess, is a little bit about, you know, I said there was no theme, and I don't think there necessarily is a theme, but it does have a commentary about sort of the shift from the 60s into the 70s when people just got a lot more paranoid, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
Things got crazier, not only here, but overseas. You know, you think Vietnam kind of started late 60s into the 70s. And it's funny also to think about this movie, The Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. When those Manson murders happened, the 60s died, and then the paranoia of the 70s kicked in. And so do you think, though, that there is that sort of despair, this dread of the 70s as the free love of the 60s was being etched away by, and this movie would say it's fascist governments. You can disagree or not on if it's fully a fascist government that we live in America. Do you think it's trying to say something about that?
I don't know if I was really picking up on a lot of it. I was aware. They mention the Mansons, like, several times in the movies. I can think of at least two off the top of my head.
Yeah.
It's definitely relevant within the story. But I don't know, man. Like, part of me felt like I didn't belong watching this movie. I was like, this isn't my crowd, you know?
Well, I mean, it's from the perspective of a completely different time. Tenet right. is a 21st century movie.
Right, yeah.
This movie, granted, made in 2014... But it's from the perspective of a hippie in the 70s.
Right, yeah. And
so maybe there's something to that.
There was a lot of probably just like peripheral context that I was like, I don't I can't relate to this.
Oh, you have no idea of zoning of L.A. in the 70s?
For some, no. That's
How dare you?
I need to show this to, like, my grandpa, who is, like...
He'd be, like, far out, man.
He's young, considering, like, our grandfathers. But he was, like, 70s was probably his prime.
What do you think about Joaquin Phoenix in this, his portrayal of Doc?
Joaquin?
Yeah, did you like Joaquin? Yeah.
I liked him in parts. There's a lot of scenes in this, Heath, where he's talking to a person, and I am like, what is going on right now? Like, these two people are saying words, they're English words, so I know what they mean, but these sentences make no sense. Did that ever happen to you in this movie, where you're absolutely. I don't know what he just said.
But I was here for it. I think that was part of the point, though. We didn't know what was real, what was not. I think early on, when he has a guy come into his office to ask him to, you know, follow up on a dude that he knew in prison, mm-hmm. and he brings up Mickey Wolfman. He writes down, like, paranoid trip, ?
Yeah.
He doesn't even know if the conversation is real. Right. But you're exactly right. You can also think of when he goes to the Golden Fang office, which I think just ends up being this syndicate of dentists led by Martin Short who get people hooked on heroin but then also give them new teeth so they can help them on both sides of the spectrum,
because heroin, you end up getting bad teeth when you use that.
It takes the calcium out of your entire body.
Right.
Owen Wilson's wife Hope, she explained that to us, very, very true. And then she shows him the picture of the baby and he goes and then just goes back to normal.
Did that make you laugh? Okay, I remember chuckling in that one. That was a funny. Joaquin did a great job of that, right? Because the whole scene,
his delivery, he's on
like
some of this
super
stuff.
Mellow, and he's that picture, and he's like,
and then goes immediately back to normal. At least we got one out of you. But anyway, there's that scene of him and Martin Short and his buddy and that girl who is hooked on heroin because of Martin Short here. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what's going on. They end up driving away, and then it doesn't matter at all. Mm-hmm. We never see Martin Short again. Was he even real? I don't know.
I don't know either. What I'm astounded by is
the
that
weed.
We are agreeing that all of these things don't make sense, and I'm like, so that's why I didn't like it. And you're like, well, that I like it.
4.5 stars on Letterboxd I gave this. I'm just along for the ride, man.
Yeah.
Is the ride real? I don't know.
But it doesn't matter to you.
It doesn't matter. After watching this movie again for the third time this week, I don't even think the narrator is real. Sortilege, or whatever her name is, who you see her pop up just every now and then, basically to be like Doc's voice of reason, I don't think she's real. I think that is literally just a hallucination of Doc's, who acts as this moral compass for him.
Mm-hmm.
Is she real?
I don't know. I'll tell you something.
Is Shasta real?
This is unrelated, but I remember trailers for this coming out in 2014.
Good trailers.
It came out if my memory serves me, this is 10 years ago, Heath, which is crazy to talk about, right? 10 years ago. If my memory serves me right, it came out at the end of the year in 2014.
Sure.
And I was watching trailers, and I have a guess as to why I thought this, but I don't know for sure. I was certain that Amy Poehler was in this movie.
Reese Witherspoon is in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of look alike. Was that what you were thinking?
That's my guess, is that I saw Reese Witherspoon in 2014 and thought it was Amy Poehler. But the movie ended, and I was like, I looked over to my wife, and I said, where was Amy Poehler?
Did Kate Watzke like this movie?
No. But she wanted me to relay that she's very pleased at how much you like Little Women.
Okay, great. Okay, we're on to something.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I've rated Little Women 5 stars, so I like this. I like Little Women more than I like this movie.
There you go.
I do believe Bigfoot's real, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't fully understand what that character is supposed to represent, because he's half this just brutal policeman, but then he's also kind of sympathetic, and you sort of sympathize with him at the end, because the Golden Fang got his partner killed, and then he eats the weed.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm not your brother. And then he leaves. Was that real?
Yeah, his character in particular is weird.
Here's my hope, is that you guys listening to us talk about this movie, is when you watch the movie, that's how you feel. I'm talking to the audience here, Drew, by the way.
How do you want them to feel?
Confused.
Yeah.
But also, like,
I can assure them they're going to be confused.
I'm glad I'm listening. Because you can watch this movie without any distraction and at the end still be like, what?
Right. Which I gave up probably 45 minutes in into watching it without distraction. And I said, I'm going to start doing other things while I'm watching it because it's pointless.
Oh, that's brutal. That's brutal. Maybe the point was the friends we made along the way. But you got to think, okay, here's what I will say. Here's mm-hmm. the point. Here's something about Paul Thomas Anderson. He's not cynical at all. He's a romantic. He romanticizes, especially these relations between two people. I can think of Phantom Thread, which is a crazy relationship between, his name is Reynolds Woodcock.
That's Alma. Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's Daniel Day-Lewis's mm-hmm. character. And his muse-turned-wife, Alma.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert for his Phantom Thread. She poisons him every now and then with mushrooms that she puts in his omelet to make him really sick so that he needs her. But he finds out about it at the end, and he's okay with it. However, this is not meant to be super like, oh, that's insane. It is, and you can think that. But he also romanticizes it, too.
Is that like the big reveal in that movie?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that is the big reveal in that movie. It's a beautiful movie. I recommend. But he romanticizes. He romanticizes Barry Egan and Punch Drunk Love. He even romanticizes the found family of Boogie Nights. He romanticizes, I think, not necessarily Doc's relationship to Shasta in this movie. I think that one is left for your own interpretation at the very end. He romanticizes Coy, played by Owen Wilson, and Hope, and how Doc really, I think his thing that he wants the most out of this is to help Coy get back to his family. So that is a romanticized relationship. Within all of this cynical paranoia that's heading into the 70s, we still can find hope. We still can find hope in our family. And the wife's name is Hope.
Bada bing.
Are you picking up what I'm putting down there?
On paper, that makes sense to me. So,
right on. Did you like Owen Wilson's Coy in the small amounts that you saw?
It was interesting.
Wow.
Because it's not what I think when I think Owen Wilson.
No, not like at
it's
all.
It's very different from most of the other Owen Wilson roles I've seen him in. At the very least, you were like, wow, that was a different Owen Wilson.
I was just happy to see him in a Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Let me ask you this. Would you have liked this movie better? Because at first it was supposed to be Robert Downey Jr. in the lead role. Mm-hmm. Would you have liked Robert Downey Jr. as Doc Sportello? And do you think he would have done a better job? I think he would have. But I still really like this movie.
I think he would have, too.
I think this is actually a perfect role for Robert Downey Jr.
His role in Zodiac,
uh-huh.
which is also 70s.
Yeah.
And he kills it in that. And it's kind of...
It's in that similar vein. I feel like if you went
into... Is his name Paul Avery?
Paul Avery, you got it right. Perfect.
If Zodiac ended up being the Paul Avery story, then it very well could have kind of dipped into the same themes that this movie did.
You know, it's like a sliding doors sort of... aspect here. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what that movie would have been like with Robert Downey Jr. in the lead role. But I thought Joaquin did a good job.
I don't think Joaquin...
This is his second best Paul Thomas Anderson movie, though.
Joaquin's not the reason I didn't like the movie. Let me put it that way. But I you're right. It feels like Downey would... This would have just been perfect for him, right? He would have thrived in that.
I do want to point out, before we get into awards, for people that do not watch Paul Thomas Anderson movies, let me just say this. Don't start with this one, okay?
Okay. Well,
let this one be one of your last ones.
This is my second Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
Your first one was There Will Be Blood?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's a good one to start with.
Right, which I love that movie.
There Will Be Blood, Boogie Nights, The Master, Licorice Pizza.
I've heard Punch Drunk Love's good.
Punch Drunk Love is... Oh, man. Here's the thing about... Can I say something about Paul Thomas Please. Anderson? So There Will Be Blood, most of the time, I'm like, this is the best movie ever made. And you know what? Me and Tab are going to have this conversation anyway, but I'm going to reiterate it here. Every now and then, though, I watch The Master, Phantom Thread, or Punch Drunk Love, and I say, this is the best movie ever made. He's got that. He does it for me, man.
Mm-hmm.
PTA. Thank you, sir.
It's a very...
I have his book right here.
You're holding it right there.
Paul Thomas Anderson, Masterworks. It's basically a coffee table book, but featuring a lot of essays by movie critic Adam Naiman, who loves Paul Thomas Anderson, and a foreword by the Safdie brothers. And let me tell you this. He's got... wait a second. Are we going to do a Hard Eight and The Color of Money? Because here's a cool thing, too, about this book. He has a whole section of movies that are inspirations of Paul Thomas Anderson works.
Wow. It's like he wrote it for us.
But he didn't do it. He didn't do the Big Lebowski for Inherent Vice.
You made the jump. You said Inherent Vice needs to go with Big Lebowski.
I did.
Okay.
I did. Go ahead. I've heard some references, though. And actually, I'll tell you what. I read the essay about Inherent Vice leading up to this, and he did make a quick mention on how Big Lebowski should be a touchstone for Inherent Vice. Mm-hmm. So I hope that when people watch the movies, if they do watch these movies together, that they can see that sort of connection. And I hope you do, too, as well, Drew.
Yeah.
So let's get into awards, and then we'll get into the Big Lebowski. Here's my hope. That you liked The Big Lebowski more than you liked Inherent Vice.
Yes. However, I mean, we're talking one star, so like...
the bar is low. Your lowest rated movie ever on Letterboxd. That is incredible. My MVP for Paul Thomas Anderson's Inherent Vice is the greatest director of all time.
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Right, yeah, yeah.
He's great. You can still see his flair. You can still see his... his eye for camera work and his eye for characterization in this movie. It is the least, though, Paul Thomas Anderson movie feel-wise because it is based on that Thomas Pynchon novel like we were talking about.
So do you think that if a different director, and I won't pick out a particular one, but just say
Ridley Scott.
Always pick on Ridley. Just some middle-tier director did a movie that was based on this book. Do you think you would enjoy it less?
I would enjoy it a lot. It wouldn't have this style at all.
Right.
It wouldn't have this flair. It wouldn't have the lived-in beach quality feel that I think PTA brings to it. What's your MVP?
I like Brolin.
He's good in this movie, man.
I'm a big Brolin fan.
He's funny.
And he's good. I mean,
he's one of the funnier PTA characters.
Those were the scenes that I was able to kind of lock in on and be like, all right, I'm engaged because of Brolin.
I love the rivalry between the two, rivalry slash friendship. He calls Doc early, and he's telling him about Shasta, and he's like, hey, we got to the house, and she's gone, man. And he's like, wait, she's dead? He goes, yeah, she's gone. She left. We don't know where she is.
Yeah.
He's like, what? He's like, can we act professional, yeah. Bigfoot? So Bigfoot likes messing with this guy. I also liked Bigfoot's interaction when Benicio del Toro... as the lawyer comes in,
mm-hmm.
and he goes, all right, we're going to kick Doc, meaning they're going to let him go. He goes, you're going to kick him? That's assault. Great Benicio del Toro 5 or 6 minutes in this movie.
Yeah, he's good, too. He is. I liked Benicio in this one, too, especially because, okay, the first Benicio I ever saw was Sicario.
This is the exact opposite.
He's actually...
He's a goofy maritime lawyer in this movie.
Is much different.
Yeah. Yeah, he's menacing in Sicario. But here he's like, clients pay me, Doc. Clients pay me.
Yeah. So, shout out to Brolin.
Yeah, Brolin does a good job. It's a hard character, I think, to portray, but he does a good job with it.
He had fun with it.
He definitely did. You can tell,
you know? Like, every time he's eating the chocolate-covered banana.
Yeah. It's great visual gags as well. Criticism, I said this movie should be an hour shorter. I think it's way too long. This is a great, could have been a great 90-minute movie. What is your criticism, Drew? I'm reading it right here.
So, all right, well, I'm just going to try to give the audience a visual. So we've got it in our Google Doc, and we've got Heath, this movie should be an hour shorter. And then right below it, I wrote, this movie should be 2 hours and 20 minutes shorter.
And if you're curious, the runtime for this movie is 2 hours and 20 minutes.
I couldn't help myself.
That's funny. That's funny. And that's fair. If you don't like it, I understand.
This is the first movie in this podcast, Heath, that I legitimately give a thumbs down. That's pretty impressive. We're on, what, our, like, 13th episode or something like that?
I know. I mean, is that 26 movies now?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. Here's a still. I'm showing you the book right now. I'm showing
the
you
master.
The Paul Thomas Anderson book. This is a better Joaquin Phoenix, Paul Thomas Anderson movie. This is The Master,
mm-hmm.
featuring Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Now, that one's not a comedy, right?
Well, but like any Paul Thomas Anderson movie, if you look at it in the right way, anything is funny.
Right. So it's got some funny parts.
Yeah.
But it's like...
I mean, even just the absurdity of these two guys' relationship and the way they portray themselves, I think is hilarious.
But there's more dramatic elements to it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Favorite scene, I think Doc's initial conversation with Coy's wife, Hope, is hilarious, where she's telling him how, you know, Coy, we think he's dead, but I think he's actually missing. And she tells him about the baby and how, as they were hooked on heroin, she was taking care of the baby, and the baby got worse. And then that big reveal of her showing him the picture. We don't even get to see the picture, but his just, ah! And then we're back to normal, having the conversation with her. Great comedy. Yeah. Almost slapstick in a way.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite scene. Your favorite scene?
I thought it was funny. Martin Short is, he's so unique.
It's just an insane role for the 5 minutes it's he's on screen.
Insane that he's this, like, corrupt dentist. Yeah. And then is it like his secretary who comes into the room and says, like, are you gonna come in here? And he just, like, drops his pants there and runs out of the room.
Yeah. Weird character. I don't even know if he was real. The whole thing is supposed to be in this marijuana fog.
Right.
And maybe a little acid.
You know what? Maybe if I was high, I'd like it more.
I wasn't high when I watched this movie, but I liked it.
None of the three times?
No.
You probably should have, just like as a control group.
Yeah. If I like it or dislike it more.
Yeah.
I probably would like it more, honestly.
I think you'd like it more.
It all, because actually, what if you have to watch it high and it all makes sense then?
Man, that'd be fun.
Wait a second.
It's like The Wall. You know, Pink Floyd's
The Wall?
There was a movie. It was either a movie, I think it's a movie, or it might just be like a concert. But I heard it was like, you can't watch The Wall sober. It's just not going to make sense.
Interesting.
But if you're not sober, wink, wink, then, like, it's a good time.
Oh, okay.
I'll go see if it's a movie or if it's just, like, one of their concerts.
Man, I'm sorry that my favorite artist of all time had a movie that you rated your lowest on Letterboxd.
Hopefully, let's hope that I find a movie I like.
We're going to do a lot more Paul Thomas Anderson. Don't you worry. Not anytime soon.
I don't think... Sorry.
You're telling me... You know what? Let's just go to your Letterboxd real quick. You are telling me that you like I Love You, Beth Cooper.
I knew you were going to pull that one out.
I Love You, Beth Cooper more than Inherent Vice.
Listen.
It was that bad for you, huh?
By no means is I Love You, Beth Cooper a cinematic achievement, but...
You gave Wonder Woman 1984 4 stars? Well,
you have to read my review on that one.
Best film score I've heard in my life. Hans Zimmer is the sole reason this gets 4 stars. It would probably be 2 stars without it. I love that you have an explanation to my criticism that I just gave.
I was like, well, hold on.
You think The Joker is a better Joaquin Phoenix movie than Inherent Vice?
Yeah. What did I give The Joker?
You gave The Lighthouse 2.5 stars? Oh my goodness. Now I'm just going down a rabbit hole. You gave The Joker 3 stars, but you put a heart right next to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, hold on.
You think is better than...
I don't think I... Did I rate The Northman? I don't think I've rated it on Letterboxd yet.
You did not rate The Northman. Did you like The Northman, though?
No.
You didn't like The Northman?
I didn't like The Northman at all.
I thought we came out of that movie, you were like, yeah, that was pretty cool.
No, you were like, that movie was pretty cool. And I was like, uh-huh.
So you just went along with me there?
I was like, I'm not going to break it to him right now.
Dude, The Northman was sick.
So people love The Northman. I didn't like it. There were parts I liked, but there were some parts where I was like, nah. I'm not here for it.
You just don't like the story of Hamlet. I get it.
I think Robert Eggers is pretty... It's not that him and PTA are similar filmmakers, but their movies are out there. It's going to be another one of those where it's like it either hits you right or it doesn't.
That's fair. I'll give it to you. You want to talk about The Big Lebowski?
Yeah.
Oh, the dude. One of my favorite movie characters of all time. And let me say this. Jeff Bridges... One of my favorite actors of all time.
Yep.
It's him and it's Harrison Ford are like my two probably favorites I've ever seen. I love these guys.
It makes sense. If anyone who knows you...
Well, thank you,
It
Drew.
Would make complete sense that you're a Jeff Bridges guy. Because give off that aura.
I appreciate that. The dude is by far his most iconic character.
Yeah.
Hey, shout out to his Tron character, though. That guy. Forgot his name off the top of my head. We'll do a Tron Legacy episode here pretty soon.
Okay.
But for now, let's talk about The Big Lebowski. 1998 Coen Brothers movie. You like the Coen Brothers. I love the Coen Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
The Coen Brothers and Quentin Tarantino, hear me out. I have a take on them. They're obviously some of the most acclaimed directors ever made. But for me, their movies were kind of what got me into more experimental movies, for lack of a better word. Like,
yeah.
Growing up in like early high school, middle school, you know, I saw Reservoir Dogs for the first time. I saw Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. I saw The Big Lebowski for the first time. And it kind of opened my eyes up to a bigger world of movies. Yeah. Is that maybe for you too, or what?
The Coen Brothers movies that I first watched was Fargo.
Oh, great one, yeah.
Raising Arizona.
You loved Raising Arizona.
Yeah, hilarious.
It's a good one.
And of course, I mean, No Country for Old Men's kind of like on another level. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's just fantastic. But yeah, especially like when it comes to like dark comedies, like Fargo was the first movie I watched where it was like, there's really shouldn't be anything funny about what's going on here, but I'm laughing. And like, that is just
put her in a wood chipper.
Yeah.
And it's somehow funny.
I think he shot his fellow over there, yeah?
When they've done projects without each other, you can tell that they're different.
Well, have you seen... You haven't seen Driveway Dolls yet, have you?
Driveway Dolls was, I believe, was it Joel or Ethan Coen?
I think it was Ethan.
So, Driveway Dolls was directed by Ethan Coen, and it's real funny, real wacky. The Tragedy of Macbeth,
yeah,
directed by the other Coen brother, no comedy whatsoever. And it feels more like, I guess the closest comp I can think of is No Country for Old Men. But even that has a little comedic value
right.
in it,
but
too.
But they both directed that one, right?
And they both directed so that one. So like what I'm saying is that...
They're very different.
They're on the opposite ends of the spectrum. They come together and they make these weird, dark comedies is what you would say, and I would say too, for sure. Some of my favorite movies are Coen Brothers movies. I even think of like Inside Llewyn Davis. Have you seen Inside Llewyn Davis?
Mm-mm.
Dave Van Ronk, loosely based off Dave Van Ronk, who was a contemporary with Bob Dylan. And it's basically a week in the life of Llewyn Davis and like seeing how he just goes about his way. Very interesting movie to talk about whether you think he's just a guy down on his luck or if he's just a jerk. Played by Oscar Isaac.
Have you seen the other Coen Brothers movies that I haven't seen that I want to is Barton Fink?
Haven't seen Barton Fink yet, but I've heard really good things.
I've heard really good things. I want to see that one.
But they come together and they make great movies, yep. Better than they can by themselves.
Do you think it's a stretch to say that Big Lebowski is their most famous movie?
It might be No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
I think their three are Big Lebowski, you're right on that, No Country for Old Men, and Fargo. Those are their three.
Yeah.
And then in certain circles, Southern gospel circles, we love Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, okay? Can't get enough of the boys in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou.
My wife, who grew up in a Southern Nazarene church, loves Oh Brother, Where Art Thou.
Oh, dude. I can't wait till we do our Oh Brother episode. So good. So good. But I would say, yes, Big Lebowski, you could make the argument, is their most popular movie.
Yeah. Yeah, the argument's at least there.
And so what's your relationship to this movie, Drew?
There was a point in my life when I started, like, searching for comedies. And I just remember every list that I looked at had Big Lebowski on there. It's just, like, a quintessential, like, if you want to watch a classic comedy, you got to see Big Lebowski. I saw it sometime in high school, and I was like, yeah, it was funny. I didn't think it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen, but I enjoyed it.
I love this movie.
Yeah.
It's maybe my favorite comedy, one of them up there.
Yeah.
It's a mixture of the writing, which is so witty, but also the line deliveries by all these actors. They do such a good job. So I saw this movie the first time in high school, loved it, and have just kept it on the rewatch. I remember, though, it got bolstered for me in college, because I remember there's this one girl who was like, oh, my favorite movie is The Big Lebowski. And I had a crush on her. And so I was like, oh, I love The Big Lebowski. It's one of the funniest
things I've ever seen. It's my favorite movie I've ever seen.
It's the best movie ever. So that's my relationship to The Big Lebowski. But I love the dude. I really do. The dude is maybe my favorite movie character to ever exist. This guy, you know, they've started a religion about him, dudism. There are people that practice dudism. I'm not one of them.
No.
I'm a God-fearing Christian. But if I wasn't, I'd probably be...
There you go.
Probably be preaching the gospel of the dude.
Yeah, the dude's awesome.
Slightly based off a movie producer called Jeff Dowd, who actually helped the Coen brothers get funding for their first movie, Blood Simple. By the way, our No Country for Old Men Blood Simple episode. That's what we're doing with No Country for Old Men, by the way.
Yes.
I need you to watch Blood Simple soon.
Yeah, that's their first one, right?
It's their first one, but when you watch it, you can tell that, okay, these guys are going to make No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
Great movie. Love it. Anyway, so Jeff Dowd, they actually were like, this guy is who we want to make a movie about. And they made Jeff Bridges do it. And man, did he kill it. Ugh. So what is The Big Lebowski about? I would say has more of a plot, definitely. But yeah. still, it's more about the characterization. I mean,
you said they were like, they're both kind of meandering, right?
Yeah, they're
like
just...
neither one moves in a straight line.
No.
This one's a little bit tighter, but...
So Jeff the Dude Lebowski is mistaken for Jeffrey Lebowski, who is the Big Lebowski, which explains why he's roughed up and he has his precious rug peed on. In search of recompense, the dude tracks down his namesake, who offers him a job. His wife has been kidnapped and needs a reliable bagman, aided and hindered by his pals Walter Sobchak, a Vietnam vet, and Donnie, master of stupidity. Why you gotta do Donnie like that? You know, Donnie gets a bad rap in this
Donnie's
movie.
Just the punching bag of this movie. I mean,
how many times does Walter tell Donnie to just shut up?
So
much. Oh, man. Oh. I could just... This is one of those movies for me where I could just... I can turn it on at any time. It's also a great... night watch, I would say, starting at like 11 p.m. sort of thing. But it's a movie that you don't even have to watch the whole thing. You can literally just watch a couple scenes for like 10, 20 minutes. Like, you're satisfied again until you watch it again.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do want to stick on this conversation about the dude, though. What does the dude represent in this movie specifically? Because this movie is not in the 70s. It's like the hippie movement's gone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like the last vestige, I would say, of the hippie movement in the dude. He's anti-establishment,
right?
But not mm-hmm. forceful about it. He's just living his life.
Right, yeah. He's not like 21st century anti-establishment people are very like outspoken, kind of in your face about it. So this was like the last era of those anti-establishment, but also just like casual, relaxed, just chill guys. You know?
I mean, when he has that meeting to get recompense for his rug with the Big Lebowski... He's like, do you know what day it is, sir? Why are you not working? He's like, what day is it? I have no idea. The dude is just living his life.
Yeah.
The dude abides.
Mm-hmm.
The dude abides. It's great stuff. But yeah, I think he kind of represents that anti-establishment, but not in a like aggressive way.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, you even think Sam Elliott's narration of him at the beginning. He's like, here's a man, a hero. Not necessarily going to call him a hero.
Right.
But here's the dude... And the dude is most certainly lazy.
He's, you know, he's not really...
But we all need a dude in our lives.
He's not like a typical movie character.
No.
Like, that's not someone you usually write a movie about, you know?
Is he a loser?
No, he's not a loser. I don't think so.
I love how this movie is framed through bowling. Would you consider this a sports movie?
No, I wouldn't. However... I do think bowling is the perfect sport to feature in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Like, it's what the other most sport? Leisure sport you can have.
Exactly.
Even more than
golf.
Even
more than golf, yeah.
And when the guys are asking about the money in the end because they think he's the Big Lebowski, he holds up the bowling ball. He's like, what is this? He goes, obviously, you're not a golfer. But you're right. Bowling is the perfect framing device, I think, for the dude.
If this movie wasn't as vulgar as it is...
It's
it would be
vulgar.
A perfect movie to just have on at the bowling alley all the time, you know, because it's just...
I was going to say you could put it on a mute, but even then, visually, you probably could have a few scenes.
Yeah, then you'd still have to cut out a few scenes.
The only reason I say it's a sports movie is because he does say one thing. You know, he's got the pager, and the Big Lebowski and Philip Seymour Hoffman's character are going to page him whenever he needs to go pick up the money. But he says... I told him, if it's during league play, I can't do it.
Right. And then Donnie's like, when what's during league play?
Shut up, like, Donnie.
Conversation does not start and end at your convenience. John Goodman is
so good.
I was
going to ask you, who is your favorite? Do you think...
I don't know if I can choose between those three.
Dude, them all three together, especially Walter and... The dude's conversations. Oh my goodness.
That's brilliant writing.
And I love how this movie characterizes friendship. Because we have friends that we kind of wonder, why are we friends with this person?
Yep.
But it works and you like love that guy or mm-hmm. love that girl, you know what I mean? And Walter, at every turn, the dude is like, Walter, why are you doing, why are you the way that you are? Even I can think of when they go to that kid's house, right? Because they think he was the one that stole the briefcase. And Walter, beats the Ferrari out front, ends up being someone else's. And then at the end, Walter's like, let's go bowling, dude. And then they just go bowling. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I want to ask you also about the comedy in this movie. Is this your kind of comedy?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I really like the slapstick kind of like airplane kind of comedy. I think that's like really my wheelhouse, stupid comedy. But Big Lebowski, and it's not stupid. It's Coen Brothers, man. Yeah. Like it is, regardless of the subject material, their comedy is in every one of them. And I think it's so funny. And it's particularly about, like, I don't think I should be laughing about this. You know what I mean?
Well, I can, like, think of one line specifically when they're talking about, you know, the Germans, they're nihilists, right? And at first, I think he calls them Nazis. And he goes, actually, they're nihilists. And Walter is like, well, that's worse. At least Nazis, at least they have an ethos. And you're like, that's not funny, but it's hilarious. Right.
So I watched an interview with Jeff Bridges where he said, because I think the question was like, he was like, how did you embody this character? And like, you know, what were you thinking when you were delivering your lines? And he said
that he smoke a lot of tie sticks and hang out in the ROTC building. And
he said that the Coen brothers in the script wrote out every and every like, and if he didn't hit every one of them, he had to redo the take.
These guys are geniuses.
Yeah, so like,
that's incredible.
When he's like, when Jesus, the bowler, like his rival bowler, yeah, comes over and he's like, I'm gonna kick your butt next week. Yeah, man, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man. Like that
entire it feels so natural.
Like it's a guy just like, but yeah, they were like, I want you to hit every one of these marks. Is brilliant.
The Jesus, his theme, this is a funny part of this movie that I liked. I thought about this actually the last time I saw it. So the Jesus, when you first see him, he's got the Spanish version of Hotel California as his theme music. I like that because the dude hates the Eagles. Absolutely hates the Eagles. He tells that cab driver to stop playing the Eagles because he's had a bad day. And he loves Creedence Clearwater Revival. I love that little detail. Sorry.
Great little Easter egg.
And hey, shout out to Creedence Clearwater Revival. Would you be surprised if I said this was one of my favorite bands?
No, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, they were.
You seem like a John Fogerty guy.
I love Creedence, man. I love Creedence. Oh, dude. So yeah, line delivery in this movie. That's interesting. I didn't think about that. But the Coen brothers, the writing is the best part of their movies. They are so good at the writing.
Do you have a favorite Creedence song? Quick side tangent.
I think it's Someday Never Comes.
I don't know if I've heard that one.
You got to listen to that one.
I'm going to put it on my list.
Yeah, put it on your list. Also, I love the Creedence Clearwater Revival song they sing in this one when they have the botched money drop off, run through the jungle. Walter basically thinks he's back in Vietnam doing this operation. There's another Creedence Clearwater Revival song that they have in this. Looking Out My Back Door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. I'm going to go ahead and give you some of my favorite quotes from this movie. I already talked about if it's during league play, and it's the way he says that. He's like, if it's during league play, and then he doesn't even say the rest. He just shakes his right. head. He's like, there's actually one from Walter on here. When they go to deliver the money, and he wants to keep the money. So actually what he puts in there is, and this is how he says it, he goes, my dirty laundry, dude, the undies, the whites. Love that. After the car gets stolen, he has the police come over, and they're asking him what was stolen. He goes, oh, some a tape deck, some Creedence tapes, my papers, my business papers. And they go, what do you do? And he just looks at him deadpan. He goes, I'm unemployed. I love this movie so much, dude. And then this is my favorite line of the entire movie. So it's when him and Maud, they're talking, getting to know each other. And he goes, you ever heard of the Seattle 7? Yeah, that was me and six other guys. Jeff Bridges delivers it in a perfect fashion, way better than I ever could.
He's so good. Like, if you could write a movie, would you want it to be The Big Lebowski?
Yeah. Is that the type of movie you'd
want to watch?
Oh,
and you'd want to write?
I'd want to make, yeah. Yeah, if I were to make a movie, just a movie where a guy is hanging out, and there is a plot, obviously, like, there's the whole conspiracy about the Big Lebowski's wife, Bunny. Where is she? She's been taken. Or is she, you know? That's the whole thing. But it's really about the dude just abiding through this story.
Yeah.
And as we know, the dude abides.
I feel like if we got, like, down the road and you were like, Drew, man, I made a movie. And I was like, great, I want to see it. And it was like the Big Lebowski. I'd be like, yeah, this makes is sense. A Heath movie.
I did get to pick the movies this week. This was my week to pick them. Yeah, these are...
We should really watch Big Lebowski together at some
point. Oh, absolutely.
We should have done it this week. But
yeah, we probably should have done it this week in hindsight.
We'll find it.
Listen, when we get to a point where this thing is... We're taking this thing on the road. We're watching the movies with each other every week.
Yeah.
Kate and your children as well at that point.
Right, yeah.
Hey, little Watsky, do you want to watch Blade Runner 2049? How old are you? 4?
You want to watch Mandy?
You want to watch Mandy? All right, here's one thing, though. I think this movie is an allegory. Hear me out. This movie is an allegory for the U.S. military's involvement in the Middle East. Do you agree or not? Shall I explain?
Please, because that thought never crossed my mind. When did this movie come out?
1998. So, like, right after Desert Storm. So the Big Lebowski himself represents the U.S. military-industrial complex, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he tells... Jeffrey the Dude Lebowski, not to be confused with the Big Lebowski, tells the dude, hey, we need you to go over and find Bunny or go over to the Middle East and help those people out.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, there's nothing over there for them to find.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude is just sent over there. And as the soldiers were just sent over there to the Middle East, granted, I'm coming at it from a spot where I think the Coen brothers might be coming from. I don't fully agree with the politics necessarily.
But you're thinking this could have been...
This could have been broad. Mm-hmm. And so, him, Walter, and Donnie all represent U.S. soldiers sent over to the Middle East. The dude is your average soldier who was just put into this situation. Walter represents the gung-ho soldier that's over there helping, wanting to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And Donnie represents the casualties, because Donnie does die in the end fighting the Nihilists.
Right.
He represents the unneeded, unwanted, and unwarranted casualties that happened by sending troops over to the Middle East. Hear me out? That's it. Hear me out, question mark?
I don't know, Heath. I don't know if I can get on board with that. But it's a good thought.
Thank you. I wanted to put that theory out here. The reason I bring that up is because at the beginning, on the TV, George H.W. Bush, not to be confused with his son, he's talking about Saddam Hussein.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a little bit of that commentary in there.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. It's not something I would have pulled out of this movie.
Something to think about. All right, let's do awards here, because this one's going to be fun. What's your MVP?
Man, I mean, you asked me earlier which one of those three main guys, Walter, Donnie, the dude, is my favorite. And I don't know if I can choose, because they're all so good, and they all feed off of each other so well.
What did Lenin say? I am the walrus?
L-E-N-I-N, Donnie.
Vladimir Ulyov Lenin!
It's just such a great tandem, like, between those three. They're my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, and I mean, mine's kind of along those lines. It's the comedy, it's the writing, and it's really those three guys are the focal point, the anchor of that comedy. They're great. Criticism? Which, I'm going to be honest with you, I saw your thing here, and I'm a little bummed, because...
Do you like the tripping scene?
Especially the second one, when he's dancing down the stairs. That's hilarious. How did he make his feet do that?
I'm thinking about just, like, the, you know, where it's his, like, head, big face, you know? It was another instance, like in Hair and Vice, where I was like, I feel like I should be high right now.
Well, he was for the both of you, you know?
Right, exactly.
Listen, you could have taken
he
those...
He treats objects like women, man.
Yeah, you could have... I understand. You could take those. That's a fair criticism.
It felt a little out of place to me. Not that it was, like, this big jump that the dude would be tripping, but just, like, you're on a pretty consistent ride throughout the movie of just kind of going throughout his life, and then you've just got this crazy out-of-pocket tripping scene where I was kind of like, nah, I'd rather move past it.
That's fair. But my criticism is not enough of the Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about, man, how can I criticize this movie? And not enough of the Jesus is in, I want to see more of him.
Right.
Which I think he's actually in here a perfect amount. But why is he in there in the first place? That's my only question about this movie. You know what I mean? I don't know exactly what he's supposed to, what his purpose is.
Right.
Unless he's just this foil, because he's also this sort of loner, do your things yourself, also a pervert dude. So maybe he's supposed to act as a foil to the dude.
Yeah, he's got some good, I mean, like his intro though, with
the intro,
the hotel cuff, it's fantastic. It's so good.
John Turturro actually, I think, made and starred in a Jesus movie that came out like 2 years ago, and not
like a
Jesus
spin-off?
Christ. Yeah, spin-off. I heard it was terrible. That I wouldn't sense. Watch it. I wouldn't watch it.
And it's 25 years later.
And again, he's a pervert.
Right. Yeah. That's probably not a character you needed to give me his own movie.
Honestly, when you think about it. Favorite scene. I'm excited about this one, because I would say the botched drop-off where Walter just butchers the entire thing, ends up spinning out of the car. That's a great scene. But I also wrote, or the scene in the cafe where he gets just super angry and the lady's like, this is a family establishment. Can you keep your voice down? He goes, Section 9 of the... And then Jeff Bridges, he's like, this isn't a First Amendment thing, man.
Yeah.
And then Walter keeps getting mad and the dude's just like, I'm out of here.
It's like everyone knows someone who has some Walter in them.
Yeah.
That you're
we
like,
all have a, we
calm
all know
down.
A Walter.
Yeah.
Or, and you could maybe speak more on this, I will just put up, I also put it down in parentheses, or the time Walter pulls the gun.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Or the, I put down, one of my favorite scenes is the dream scenes, or the tripping scenes. Or any scene with Donnie, or the conversations with Sam Elliott, especially the last one, The Dude Abides. Just one of my favorite quotes in movie history. But, again, there's like 45 different parts of this movie where I'm like, I love this. I love this thing. So, what's yours?
I love anything in the bowling alley. I think those are the funniest. And, man, I mean, Steve Buscemi just is. He kills it as just kind of like a twerp, you know? Yeah. Like, he's part of the bowling team. And he wants to be closer to the guys. And
shut up, Donnie.
They hate him. Not... Walter in particular hates him.
But Walter ends up... You can tell Walter actually loves Donnie.
He does, yeah. But just... Because,
well, they didn't pay for an actual urn. They just said, where's the nearest supermarket, and got a coffee grounds box to put his ashes in.
Ugh. His delivery on everything. When he gets the strike and he's doing his little thing and...
He's feeling good tonight.
That's another person in every group that is the person who maybe talks a little too much or is inserting themselves into conversations when they shouldn't be. We all know who that is.
But we still love that
right.
guy.
If you don't know who it is, then it's probably you. But he, when he's like, In-N-Out Burger, that's a really good burger. Shut up, Donnie!
When he pulls that gun at the bowling alley, they're calling the cops, man. Put the piece away. Am I the only one that cares about the rules around here? And that poor guy is just like, dude, that's your teammate. Are you going to do anything about it? So which one are you taking? I'm curious what you're going to say here.
Are you curious?
Yeah.
I'm going to take The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, that's
I'm going to go the older film.
I'm also going to take the
preceding film.
Drew, I'm with you. I'm going to take the preceding film.
Okay.
This is it my favorite Coen Brothers movie? Ooh, it's top three. I know that for sure. Country for Old Men is a perfect movie.
Yeah, it is.
And Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, also a perfect movie.
I think Fargo's a perfect movie, too.
Yeah. But I'm taking the preceding film with you. This is one of my favorites that we've done so far.
Did you have to dedicate some thought into which one you like better? Or did you know, Lebowski's better?
No, Lebowski is better.
Okay.
It's top tier Coen Brothers movie. Inherent Vice is mid-tier Paul Thomas Anderson. However, what did I say? Still better than 95% of
PTA
most movies.
PTA doesn't
I've ever seen.
Have a low tier for you, apparently.
There are no misses.
Mm-hmm.
All great movies. His lowest on Letterboxd. For me, his lowest movie on Letterboxd, there's actually two. It's Boogie Nights and Heartache, his first two movies that he made. I know a lot of people love Boogie Nights. I love it. I think it's great, but it's not one I'm going to look back
on. What did you give Boogie Nights?
4 stars.
Okay. So yeah, that's a good rating. Same with Heartache.
So his lowest movies are 4 stars for me.
Do you have anything on Letterboxd lower than 3 stars?
Oh, yes. Shall we?
I'd like to hear them.
I've got a lot lower than 3 stars. I've been less and less doing less than 3 stars. I don't know. 3 stars is kind of my lowest right now.
But
let's see what we
got. Do you have any 1 stars?
Oh, Madam Web was 1.5.
Oh, you saw Madam Web?
I did see Madam Web.
Oh, you poor thing. I mean, I haven't seen it, but I've just heard awful things.
It was like me, my buddy, and like 2 other guys in there. It was very sad. I've got several movies here. I've got, you're not going to like this. Baby Driver, 1/2 star.
No! 1/2 star? Yeah, dude.
The Amazing Spider-Man 2, 1 star.
Oh, Heath.
Oh, one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life was Spring Breakers. Hated it, 1.5 stars.
I haven't seen it.
I gave Sin City 1 star. Not a fan of those craps. Listen, I got a lot of movies that are...
I follow you.
Spectre was only 2 stars.
The Bond movie?
Yeah, that's surprising. I didn't like that one. Only God Forgives, 2.5 stars. And that hurts me to say, but it's true.
Who's the director of that?
Oh, I gotta bump up The Lobster again. I only got it at 3 stars. That's 3.5 at least, maybe even 4. I love The Lobster. Listen, your preferences change as you get older.
That's true.
Yorgos Lanthimos, my guy. I got a lot of 3 stars on here, man. I do.
Yeah.
I got a lot of 3 stars.
3 stars is easy for movies because it's something that you're like, I mean, I enjoyed myself.
Listen, would it's hard I to watch make a movie.
It
again?
Right. Maybe not, but I liked it.
That's
a 3-star.
A few things. We want to shout out everybody that keeps listening. We really appreciate y'all. This has been really fun for me and Drew to do. So we appreciate everybody who, and you know what? If you know us and you want to give us a message on one of the platforms being like, hey, keep it up, especially if you're overseas listening to us, we would really appreciate it.
And you know, this is something we can talk about.
Yes.
But I think we should set up an email.
Okay.
It's easy, and then we can have an inbox for if anyone wants to chime in. We know from The Martian that we miss some things, and so
I think
it'd be great to have something for people to chat us.
And we could even do a mailbag.
Yeah.
How
for
fun
sure.
is that?
Do a you little Q&A.
Let's do an email. I love that idea. Okay. Great stuff.
We'll get that put together. Heath, you want to know what we're doing next week?
I do.
Okay, NHL playoffs just started.
Oh, no way.
So do you know what that means?
Oh, man, I have an idea, but please tell me. What do we got? What do we got?
We are throwing back to...
We doing slapstick?
No.
We doing goon?
No.
Are we doing the Mighty Ducks?
No.
Are we doing Miracle?
We're going back to Gavin O'Connor.
Oh, are you serious?
We're doing Miracle... And remember the Titans.
Okay. All right. I'm here for it. A little Disney sports dramedy.
Mm-hmm. We haven't done sports in a few weeks.
I'm here for it. It's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Love both those movies.
I think we're going to have a good time.
I cry in both those movies. Yeah. And I can't wait to talk about which scenes make me cry.
Yeah.
That'll be great. Hey, this is going to be a long episode because don't turn off your podcast listening devices. You're with me here.
Don't stop listening.
Don't stop listening. Because me and our boy Tab, we're going to talk a little bit of Paul Thomas Anderson for the next 30 minutes. So, hey, we appreciate y'all listening. Stay up for that conversation. We'll see you next week.
All right. We got Tab on. If you guys are avid listeners of the pod, Tab is basically our science guy now. It's Tab and Drew's wife, Kate. Those are our science people. Tab helped us out with the science of the Martian. And now
the computer science.
The computer.
I don't know anything about actual smart human science. But
we're going to talk about something that I can also compete with as far as being able to talk about it with Tab. Paul Thomas Anderson today, man. I'm excited
yes,
for it.
Sir.
You're a huge PTA guy. What was your first PTA experience?
My first PTA movie is my favorite PTA experience, which is There Will Be Blood. I think we agree on that. His best, straight up. It could even be the best, just in general.
So I saw this movie the first time when I was a freshman in college. I think the perfect age for like a dude to see this movie is like 18 to 23 years old for the first time. So I saw that in like prime watching of it.
I think the prime age to watch it is just right out of the womb. Just throw it on there, you know? Just
That's when I have a kid, I think I'm gonna do that actually. Just every day, do like a osmosis sort of thing. Just have it on at all times. So when this kid becomes my age, we can just talk Paul Thomas Anderson at all times. I think that's the plan.
I think that's the perfect father-son bonding,
Yeah.
or daughter, who knows? You know,
Hey.
there are women Paul Thomas Anderson fans, probably.
I have not met one yet, but
My
I'm thinking
sisters liked There Will Be Blood.
so yeah, so I remember I told my mom to watch this movie one time, and she got back to me. Actually, no, we watched it together. It was during COVID, so I was back at home, you know.
Yeah.
And we watched it together. And at the end, she goes, "That was one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life." I was broken, Tab. I was broken. I was like, "Oh man."
I don't mean to talk ill about anyone's mom, but your
Yeah,
mom is
don't say it,
wrong.
bro. Don't say it,
Your mom's wrong. I'm
bro.
sorry. And I'm sure she listens to this podcast, and in advance I do apologize to her, but she is wrong.
But I'm with you, man. The first time I saw There Will Be Blood, I was like, this is one of the best movies ever,
Yeah.
man. Loved it.
It's like the movie that got me into movies. It was like the movie that made me go, oh, this is art. This is what it can do.
Yeah,
So, yeah. And
exactly.
then subsequently I've seen all of Paul Thomas Anderson's films. I mean, I got it, like, at the moment I think he is my favorite director, just straight up. Like, he's just that guy.
Yeah, no, for me too. And I've been trying to think because at this point I've now seen all of his movies. And in my opinion, even like the ones I don't like as much are still better than 90% of every other movie I've ever seen, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
Hard Eight is
I was
better
just gonna
than
say Hard
Eight.
Eight.
Right. It's still so good, right?
Yeah.
But so what do you
Fun,
think?
fun.
Yeah, what do you think about his movies like draw you in specifically? Because I'm trying to think for myself, why exactly I respond to his movies so well.
Well, first of all, I think a lot of his movies, the thread that really connects his movies is greed. A lot of his movies are about greed, and specifically control. Of a certain aspect of one's life, or of a person, or of a thing, or of a place. You got Hard Eight, like we said. It's really a Philip Baker Hall. His character wants he wants redemption. He's looking for redemption. He's taken this guy along. He's tried to become a father figure to him, and John C. Reilly wants control over his odds. At the casino, you have Phantom Thread, one of his best, another top tier movie. Control over one's partner, obviously There Will Be Blood, mentioned before. Control over the land, control over the resources, the master, control over faith and people. So it's all about control. And another thing that I love about Paul Thomas Anderson's movie is that all of these characters start their campaign for control because of something that just fell into their lap, like, let's say, Hard Eight. John C. Reilly's down on his luck. He's sitting outside a coffee shop, and then Philip Baker Hall is like, "Let me buy you some cigarettes and some coffee. Let's talk." Just by chance, Reynolds meets Alma in a coffee shop. She's a waitress there. Paul Sunday meets Daniel Plainview, just and is like, "Hey, there's this piece of land just out in the West." It's like, "Have at it,"
Right.
basically. So it's all falls into the lap. And they seize the opportunity to control. And I think that's the thread, some might say the phantom thread, that connects all his
Yum.
movies. So that's what really appeals to me, is these desperate people who just seize this opportunity. And it's
Yeah.
very fun to watch.
I think it's very fun to watch because I think Paul Thomas Anderson is a master of character work specifically. So, you know, he has these big ideas about greed and control, like you're saying, and he puts them into these people that are just written almost like perfectly. Like I
Brilliantly. Yeah.
Daniel
And
Plainview, Reynolds Woodcock, Freddie Quell and Lancaster Dodd, you know, like these are some of the most compelling characters I've ever seen in my entire life.
can I also say, I think Lancaster Dodd, best name for a character, I think, ever. I
Yeah.
mean, it's just so fun to say.
The way he just writes these characters, it's so compelling. Obviously, the performances are great.
Oh,
You
yeah.
never really have a bad performance in any of these movies from any of these actors or actresses. But yeah, for me, the character work is probably my favorite aspect of his movies.
I mean, you look at Punch Drunk Love, which came out like in the middle of this, I feel like Adam Sandler hate campaign, and he's just brilliant in that movie. Like, it's like one of his, I think his, it's the only role that rivals Punch Drunk Love is probably Uncut Gems, I'd
Yeah, it
say.
would be those two, I would say
He
for sure.
is, he's absolutely insanely good in Punch Drunk Love. And it's, you know, I think Paul Thomas Anderson is a great director of people, and he's a great character writer. And I think that just really shows. I mean,
Yeah, I think Punch Drunk Love came out within a year of, I want to say The Waterboy was the Adam Sandler movie that it came out close
yeah,
to.
it's like it was like he was like the joke actor when I was at school. He was like Adam Sandler, like, oh, he's like an Adam Sandler movie. It's like he would say that if something was bad, you know? And then Punch Drunk Love, he's insane, he's brilliant.
I have brought up that one of my favorite movies is Punch Drunk Love to a few people. I'm like starring Adam Sandler. And so they have this concept that for like, if they never seen Punch Drunk Love, they have this concept that it's like, you know, like Billy Madison or Grown Ups or something like that. But
Yeah.
I was listening to a podcast with Adam Sandler. He was with Conan, and he talked about Punch Drunk Love as his favorite role that he's done, specifically because PTA saw that he could do drama and like open that side up in him.
Yeah. And he's still insanely funny in Punch Drunk Love. Like it's a rom-com, but he's great at those dramatic parts as well, which
Right.
I was very impressed with because I think I had seen Punch Drunk Love before Uncut Gems. So I had no idea that at this part of Adam Sandler existed. Like when I watched Punch Drunk Love, and I was like, "Oh my God. Like what's he's not allowed to do that, is he?" Like it's
And
top tier PTA as
is
well.
I it is I only have a few movies, and my last question for you, but I want you to hold it for now. I want you to tell me what's your favorite, because you're a physical media guy. What's your
Yes.
favorite, like DVD or Blu-ray that you bought is? But we'll hold that for the end.
Okay.
I've got Punch Drunk Love Criterion Collection. That's one of my Blu-rays, my 4Ks that I have. So it's like that, Ad Astra, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I want to say, and I can't remember the fourth one, but
I actually recently bought Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as well. That's a
yeah,
good one.
that's a great one to just flip on and watch like 20 minutes at a time, you know. Good movie.
Yeah.
I want to talk about though, there's this shift in his filmmaking, and I think it does start a little bit with Punch Drunk Love, but then you see it more in There Will Be Blood. So his first three movies specifically, I'm thinking Heartache, Boogie Nights, and Magnolia, they have this very frantic filmmaking style. You know, the cameras are moving very rapidly. It's fidgety in a way. Shift a little bit in Punch Drunk Love, but then I think of these four movies specifically. I think There Will Be Blood, Inherent Vice, The Master, and Phantom Thread as sort of his mid level that he's at, or middle stage, excuse me. His filmmaking shifts. Cameras are slower. There's a lot more wide shots. Everything seems more peaceful from a film standpoint. Obviously, the interpersonal conflicts are still not peaceful in most of these movies. Why do you think he shifted there? And
Well,
do
I
you
think
think
it's
it's true, or am
just
I just making that up?
no, you're definitely not making that up because I was also thinking about this when I was doing my Paul Thomas Anderson marathon. I did one, I think, last year.
Oh, dear.
But you're like right on the money with that. It's like his first three movies, and I think it re what it really boils down to is he's coming to his own as a director, because you see in his first three movies, I mean, Boogie Nights is basically a Scorsese film.
Yeah.
Like it looks exactly like one. I mean, not to say it's bad. I mean, Boogie Nights is obviously a really great movie,
Yeah.
but I think he's really just coming to his own. And one thing I'd like to point out is that his movies don't become any less intense. It's just the way that the camera moves. And honestly, I think the way he does it makes it more intense, even. I mean, by the time you get to, so like you got like, you know, Boogie Nights, you got Magnolia, the camera's whizzing around at light speed, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you got turns, you got twists and turns, you got, oh, it's moving this way, it's following a character running down a mall. You know, by the time you get to Phantom Thread, it's basically still shots the whole way through. But I don't think anyone would disagree with me that Phantom Thread is an insanely chaotic movie, but it's just quieter and softer in a way.
Probably his
And I think,
craziest relationship when you think about it.
Oh, I mean, it's insane. But it's also the sexiest movie ever made, I think. And this is a guy who made Boogie Nights.
Something about a poison mushroom omelet, man. Just something about
Oh man, I mean, it gets my heart racing every time.
it.
It's his quietest movie. It's his softest looking movie. It balloons into this chaotic climax, you
Right.
know? And then you have that scene at the party, you know, where Alma wants to go dancing and Reynolds doesn't, and he goes to look for her, and it's just it that's where it really shows that this whole thing is chaotic. This whole relationship is just chaos. And they have that moment where they're just looking at each other quietly. Not a word is said, but you can feel everything that they're trying to say to each other in that moment. It's brilliant. I mean, that's like top tier filmmaking.
It really
And
is.
I think that's what we talk about when he say like he's such a good director of characters. When you by the time that happens, you get to know these characters so intimately, and you can just tell on their face what they're saying. They don't have to say it, you
Yeah.
know. And it's really brilliant.
He did his own cinematography for Phantom Thread, and I think it is his best looking movie. 99% of the time, I think There Will Be Blood is his best movie, and and maybe the best movie ever made. But every now and then, he's got Phantom Thread, The Master, and Punch Drunk Love as well. That every time I watch him, I'm like, okay, I think this might be his best. Do you ever falter?
No, I don't. I always I it's one of those crazy things that you could convince me that any of his other movies could be second place. But for me personally, There Will Be Blood is just it's just that movie. I think it is my favorite movie of all time.
It's
Like it's a weird thing because I usually contain it to a top five list. My movies all the time, and it's ever changing. But I think There Will Be Blood has been on that list, if not at the top of that list, like for the longest period of time. And it's been up there basically since I watched that movie. So I think that qualifies it as my favorite movie of all time.
yeah.
But for any of his other movies, it's like, and you could convince me that any of his other movies are his second best, basically.
I think second best for me is Phantom Thread. You're a big fan of The Master, though, too, right?
Oh yeah, I love The Master. Yeah, that's a great movie as well. But I falter between second best being Phantom Thread. If I had to pick two, Phantom Thread or Punch Drunk Love, I'd say, because they're two of his ex. Well, he's got Licorice Pizza as well, which is another. It's explicitly a romance movie, I'd say. But I mean, Licorice Pizza, I'll be honest. It's not that I'm not a fan of it, but it just doesn't compare to Phantom Thread or Punch Drunk Love.
I agree with that. I agree with
I
that.
think Punch Drunk Love is definitely on the funnier side, and Phantom Thread is more on the dramatic side, even though Phantom Thread does have those moments where it's like that's kind of hilarious. But yeah, I always falter on those, you know?
I mean, in Phantom Thread, just the conflict itself is absurdly hilarious. Even There Will Be Blood, if you look at it from a certain way, is actually pretty funny. And what Daniel Day-Lewis is doing in that role is actually kind of hilarious, even though
It's ter it's he's a terrible person, but unfortunately here is there's that one scene where the guy what's his name? The old guy after he kills his fake brother. Yeah, anyway.
the old guy who owns that land that he needs.
Yeah, but he witnesses this murder that he does, and he's like, "I'll sell you my land if you convert to the church." And he goes, "I'll give you $3,000." And he goes, "Convert." And he goes, "I'll give you $5,000." And he does not want to do it. It's so funny. I love that scene. And then, you know, Eli Sunday when he's finally converting, and he takes his chance to just be like slap the hell out of him.
Man, just what that movie's able to like, it's basically telling the story of America, right? How capitalism has overtaken the religion as the thing that America is built upon, like going into the 20th century. But what he's able to do to put it into this one man, I mean, it's going back to that idea of like his character work, to be able to put those huge ideas into one guy And not only, let me ask you this real quick. This is not a There Will Be Blood podcast, but I now that we're here, we're talking about it. I don't empathize with Daniel Plainview. He's not supposed to, but I think I think he's humanized a little bit. It's through HW specifically, but I've seen some people talk about this movie where they just see Daniel Plainview as completely evil. What do you think, real quick? I want your take.
I think he's humanized in that he's very selfish. Yeah. He sort of adopts HW because he wants to sell more, and he needs a pretty face with him. I do think he's cared for HW though. I do think he did try to be a father to him.
This thing, I think he actually does care for HW. That's my take, but
I think so. But as soon as the hint of HW becoming his competitor comes around, he's completely abandoned him.
You're my competitor.
You're making such a misstep. Yeah, no, and it's really tragic that, you know, as soon as HW starts to become a problem, even as a child, he leaves him on a train and just abandons him.
I know he does it, but like, even then, it hurts him a little bit, you know.
It does hurt him a little bit.
When he's at the church and he's finally saying, he's asking for salvation just so he get the land. Eli Sunday, actually, he gets to him by bringing up his son, you know, like that actually,
yeah, that
bothers Daniel enough to where he actually.
And this really is turned into a There Will Be Blood podcast, but I love it. As well as that business meeting he has with the railroad people, where the guy is like, hey, you can retire, spend time with your son. And he goes, and you see that hurts him. He's like, don't tell me how to run my family. But I don't think that's coming from a place of, in my opinion, I don't think that's coming from a place of loving HW. I think that's coming from a place where that guy hurt his pride and is like calling him out on something. And even when HW's back and is back at the restaurant, he sees that guy and he's like, hey, look, I'm hanging out with my kid. Don't you see? I'm hanging out with him. It's like he's trying to prove to that guy. And instead of just being with his son, you know, having a nice meal, he instead got drunk and went over there and was like, you were wrong, I was right. Excuse me, gentlemen.
I'm spending time with my son. He's right there.
He's right there. Look at him. You know, he makes a big show out of, you know, petting his son and kissing him. And it's like, it's really a show for it. Everything's a show for him. And it goes back to control of his image, control of his perception.
We will do the official There Will Be Blood pod at some point.
Yeah, we gotta save some of these talking points for later.
Exactly. Real quick, I got two questions for you. First off, favorite PTA recurring actor?
Oh, it's got to be Philip Seymour Hoffman. I mean, it just has to be.
I mean him or John C. Reilly, and I would go Philip Seymour Hoffman as well.
Yeah, I mean, rest in peace, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Perfect actor, no notes. Just has never had a bad role ever in his life. Just incredible. And, you know, like I said, Lancaster Todd, amazing. Scotty and Boogie Nights, amazing. He even has that one tiny little part in Heart 8 that's just stuck with me.
Watching that scene is worth your money to buy Heart 8 just for that scene alone, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he just completely sells it. I mean, it sticks with you the entire time. It's like one of the few scenes I admittedly remember of that movie. And it's cool that I think Paul Thomas Anderson's working with his son now, starting with Licorice Pizza.
But, I mean, yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman in all of these movies. And I love that he was able to do The Master and be, like, PTA's lead guy for one of these movies before.
Yeah.
Honestly, in my opinion, he's the only – that role specifically is the only role I think that can go toe-to-toe with Daniel Day-Lewis, is Daniel Plainview.
Like, I agree. And they're
cool to look at each other, both, you know, trying to control people, but using two different ways to do it.
It's interesting
to look at both with each other in mind.
Lancaster Dodd is a bit like if Eli Sunday was successful, you know, if that makes sense.
If God had alerted him to the, or does he say, if God had alerted
to the fluctuations in the economy, or
Lancaster Dodd,
because he is a bit more of a religious figure, although it's like a more of a cult, like it's Scientology. It's based heavily on Scientology. It's not about Scientology explicitly, but it's it's very close. He sort of takes advantage of people's faith and their definitely their insecurities. There's that scene where he interviews Joaquin Phoenix's character. I'm forgetting his name. I think it's
pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah, where he's interviewing him, he's sort of trying to convince Joaquin Phoenix that he's a failure. You know, he's like he repeats the question and Joaquin's just like, "No, I don't feel like a failure. No, I don't." And he just repeats the question like, "Do you feel like a failure? Do you feel like a failure?" And he's just sort of breaking them down in that way and preying on their insecurities. And I think that's a brilliant. And I definitely agree with you that I think he's honestly tied for best PTA character with Daniel Plainview.
All right, man. What's your favorite thing you bought so far, movie wise?
Oh, that's a tough one. I really love The Elephant Man. I got the Criterion for The Elephant Man.
David Lynch.
Yes.
David Lynch's Elephant Man.
Uh-huh. I love that movie. I think it's his most empathetic movie. I think it's a beautiful story about the inside of a person, is what really counts. You know, do I explain the movie for listeners who don't briefly? I don't know. It's basically
ahead, real quick.
It's basically just about this guy, John Merrick, who is titled the Elephant Man because he has major deformities. He's got a giant head. He's got a corked spine. So if you look at the real John Merrick, you can look at a skeleton. It's like a spiral. It's like twisted, sort of. You twisted it. So severe scoliosis, basically. It's kind of amazing that he could walk at all. And he's sort of found by this doctor, Treves, and they sort of made a show out of him, but they learned that he's actually highly intelligent and a really kind man. And that's sort of what the movie's about, is exploring that idea, you know, labeling someone as a freak, even though they're human. And it's really a beautiful movie. I think everyone should watch it. It's one of those movies I think everyone should watch at least once in life. And the Criterion of that movie is my favorite movie in my collection at the moment.
You know, I've never actually, I feel ashamed to say this, I've never seen a David Lynch movie.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
All right.
I've seen some episodes of Twin Peaks. That's about it.
Twin Peaks is great. Definitely start with The Elephant Man. I think it's his most digestible film. I would also recommend Blue Velvet. And
I've seen the first minute of Lost Highway just because I think that intro is sick with that David Bowie song, as it's just the lights speeding down the highway.
It's pretty sick, but I must say, not my favorite. I really was not a huge fan of Lost Highway.
Did you watch Inland Empire? I've heard that's crazy.
I've watched Inland Empire, and my least favorite film Twitter opinion is that this movie is good. It's not good. I hated it. I hated everything about it. It's definitely the ugliest movie I've ever seen in my life. I just don't see what people love about it. I really can't. I think Laura Dern is great. Okay. But
what?
I really just did not like Inland Empire. Yeah. If you want to get into David Lynch, I think the ones to watch are definitely Elephant Man, Blue Velvet, and you know what? Straight Story. I did like Straight Story. That's a nice, wholesome one.
Straight Story is the one I am most leaning towards wanting to watch, just from what I've heard of it.
It's a good one. It's a nice, wholesome movie. Sissy Spacek is very good in it. The old guy whose name I don't know, the main character, is very good at it.
Man, we have gotten into the weeds of movies on this segment of the pod, and I'm having a blast. This has been fun.
We've gotten so into the weeds that we mentioned David Lynch in a PTA segment.
Dude, that's what Proceeding Film's all about. But yeah, this has been fun. Tab, we'll have you on more for sure, dude.
Dude, I'd love to be on more.
We're having a good time.
I'm having a great time.